Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
And welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me on the Twitter at Total Tutor, and I'm excited to welcome the program from Fuller House and much, much more, Dave Coulier. Dave, thanks for calling, and how are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Oh, a tremendous fan of Full House. My kids love the show, still watching Full House every day. So when I told them I had you on the show, they were beaming. And it's amazing to look back at Full House and that experience, Dave, and to say how people are just still huge fans of the show. Like, you're still on Full House, you know? Isn't it wild?
It is. It's a little bit surreal being back at Warner Brothers doing these shows, but it's also, in the same breath, it's a gift to be able to work with these people who I truly love.
It most definitely, for sure. And again, the Fuller House, congrats, is being picked up for season two. I know you're excited about that as well, right?
Yeah, I'm actually going to be on several episodes this second season, and I'm going to be directing one of the episodes this season. So I'm looking forward to working with all my my co-stars. And it's been a really busy year and a half. It's been really, really fun.
And I think the book is another exciting thing, right, Dave? The Adventures of Jimmy Bugar, is that how you pronunciate the last name?
Jimmy Booger.
Booger.
Jimmy Booger. Oh. Rhymes with sugar. Yeah, Jimmy's a 10-year-old booger from Nova Scotia, and no one had written a musical storybook about a 10-year-old booger from Nova Scotia yet, so I thought, you know what, it's time.
Oh, my. So I'm trying to use the French in this, booger. So how did you come up with that? Tell me about that, Dave.
Well, I love whenever I see kids reading, I get inspired, and I just think it's great that kids are, you know, sitting reading something. And so I wanted to create something that was highly entertaining, that had songs in it. And so The Adventures of Jimmy Booger is not just a book, it's an album. There's 15 songs embedded in the story. So when you read along on your iPad, the lyrics and the dialogue from the book automatically start playing. And so it's very interactive. It's highly entertaining. And some of my Fuller House co-stars are in this. John Stamos does some voice work. Lori Loughlin, Jody Sweetin, they're all in it. And there's some great music to entertain the parents as well. There's jazz, there's blues, there's reggae, there's country, there's rock and roll. Dave Koz, the saxophonist, plays on this. He plays some great jazz. Robbie Wyckoff, the lead singer of the Roger Waters Wall Tour, sings on this. So it's not a kiddie book. It's some really great music, and it'll make parents laugh just as hard as the kids. There's a song on this called "We Love to Fart." So it's very sophisticated.
Oh, well, that's a definite Monday morning thing we love to put. So you're hoping that the whole family will listen and read this then together, right?
Yeah, I've heard so much great response from parents saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for creating something that my kids just absolutely love reading, and it makes me laugh as well. So that was all by design. I'm a parent, so, you know, I know what it's like trying to entertain your kids. And, you know, there's 15 songs in here that are extremely catchy and really fun. And, it's very sophomoric and silly at times. It's just great to see kids reading.
Oh yeah. Is that part of your mission in a lot of ways of writing the book? Is that type of mission you see of kids and get kids to read and find something so amazing? As I was saying before, kids are watching Full House every day still. I mean, you probably don't go anywhere where you're not recognized still for that reason. And give me that thought process. Is that one of the missions to get kids motivated to read?
Well, we've told so many Full House and now Fuller House stories, and so I've been a part of that process of storytelling to kids. And so, you know, when I was creating The Adventures of Jimmy Booger, that was a big part of the thought process. Let's entertain kids, but let's also kind of give a wink to the parents at the same time. And when you realize, you know, kids get all their information on a tablet or an iPad now, they're only one click away from something, you know, on the internet that's really, you know, horrible. And so,
right,
you know, when you realize, okay, when you realize that's going on, boogers and farts don't seem so bad anymore.
Yes. And I just saw the mom's name is Sugar Booger. I love it.
Yep, Sugar Booger, and Jimmy wants to be in show business, and Sugar Booger, she was one of the snotettes at Radio City Mucus Hall, so she supports Jimmy, and she runs the most popular diner in Nova Scotia called Little Sneezers, and so it's the relationship of Jimmy with his mom and his best friend Harry Noseman, and Jimmy's pursuit of trying to be a big star someday.
and again, this is something that is getting everyone involved, and especially that are parents that have watched Full House when they were kids, that now they're close to parents, and then Southern is just such a fantastic thing. And also you wrote 15 songs, so you love the whole songwriting thing as well as the writing, right, writing the book.
Yeah, it was a really it was a labor of love, and so I wanted to create some music that kids don't normally hear. I didn't want to create a kiddie book. I wanted to create something that exposed kids to a lot of different styles of music. So there's a lot of different flavors in this. There's jazz, blues, rock, country, rock and roll. There's a Celtic song sung by a guy named Art Fleming, and it's just really fun musical storytelling. And so parents are what age are your kids?
Oh my gosh, I have 5 kids of my own, Dave. 11's the oldest and 2's the youngest.
Oh my gosh, you are the perfect parent to download Jimmy Booger and then write us a really fun review after your kids freak out for this.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I definitely will do that. I would wait to tell my wife and stuff. She's a kindergarten teacher, and I own a tutoring consulting company as well. And so definitely the word out when I start children's book and all this and all that sounds fantastic. Again, Dave, best place we can find information on you and stuff. Purchase the book, the music, everything, all that stuff. Where can we go?
Well, you can go to jimmybooger.com, and booger is spelled like sugar. And you can see all the information there, and there's links to everything. Or you can just go right to iBooks and just search for The Adventures of Jimmy Booger and download it for your kids. You'll have a blast.
Well, I think they definitely are going to have a blast for sure, and you're doing such a great project. And again, can we follow you on Twitter and stuff for people to know what's going on with Fuller House and all that stuff as well, Dave?
Absolutely. You can follow me and all my Fuller House castmates on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. We're all over the place, and we're always tweeting and Facebooking and Instagramming each other. So you can join up in our fun little Fuller House world.
All right. Well, thanks for calling. I appreciate you taking the time, and what can I tell my kids for all that? So I appreciate you coming on, and best of luck.
Okay. Thanks for all the shameless plugs.
Oh, you're welcome, Dave. I enjoyed it. Take care. All right. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, and I think we do have our guests on the line. Curtis, are you on the line?
I'm on the line.
Oh, fantastic.
Hello.
Curtis. So I'm so excited. I'm so excited to welcome the program. Curtis Armstrong, a.k.a. Booger of Revenge of the Nerds. Curtis, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. You know, my memories, and we're going to get to some of your other projects as well, of watching Revenge of the Nerds as a as a teenager. I mean, it just was one of the best cult classics ever. And I'm sure that you really thank that opportunity that you had, don't you? Especially with the brand,
oh,
how
my God.
It continues to grow even now.
No, it was a thing which none of us really appreciated at the time. We were doing it. We thought it was sort of a trashy movie and not very clever and all this. But we dove into it and worked with the writers and the director extensively on it as we were filming it. And it just turned out to be something far, far better than we ever imagined. And, at this point, it being 30 years, I guess, looking back on it now, it's just I felt very lucky to have been a part of it.
Okay, 30 years, you're dating me, but I guess I was 13 when I watched the movie then. So probably, I don't know if I got all the parental guidance I needed. You definitely educated me, Curtis, for sure. And when you first got approached for that, for Booger, to be that character, what did you think of that whole thing? I mean, I remember now looking back at your bio. I mean, you've been in other classic 80s films for sure. But once you were approached for Booger,
I was not interested. I really had sort of convinced myself. I had read for Anthony Edwards' role when I auditioned for it, for the Gilbert role. And that was the role that I thought I was going to get. And I thought, oh, that's great. Love that. And then they revealed that they had cast it and they wanted me as Booger. And I was just, it was such a bait and switch situation, and I thought, oh God, that's ridiculous. There was almost nothing of Booger in the screenplay. I mean, he barely existed at all on the screen, or on the page rather. So I wasn't very happy about it, but I grew to love it.
And we'll get back to that because you're going to be writing your memoir. But you have some projects to promote right now that are coming up that you're pretty pumped up about. Again, tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern on the CW, Supernatural. So tell us a little bit about your character in Supernatural.
Well, the character on Supernatural, it's been going on now for four seasons. He's an archangel. His name's Metatron, who was actually a biblical character. He was the scribe of God in the Bible. He's the one who wrote the commandments on the stone. But in Supernatural, he's very, very different. He's been incredibly wicked and evil and done horrible things and killed lots of people. But he has had sort of an interesting turn, which was revealed last week, where having been stripped of his grace, he's now just a human. And he's beginning to realize what being human is like, and he pities them. And so he is now in a situation where he's made a complete turn from bad guy to maybe good guy. And it has been really a delight to see where they took him. I mean, it was just not at all where I was expecting it to go. But it's been a lot of fun. So tonight we're approaching the end of this season, the 11th season, and then we're going to be coming back for the next.
Well, that's great. See, I mean, and this is what's so great about the fans of Revenge of the Nerds. Where's Curtis today? And it was very interesting. My wife saw your picture and said, because I told her I'm interviewing him. Oh, yeah. And then I showed her and said, oh, he really became attractive for sure. So they were really, so she really said that was interesting. Let's kind of jump into all our other interesting projects. So after the 11th and the 18th, so when is the season finale for Supernatural, by the way?
The season finale is, I believe, two more weeks. I'm a little uncertain about the dates at this point, but I believe it's the week after next. They're getting down to it. And it's quite a thrilling situation. They've been in a storyline right, for the last several episodes with God's sister, Amara, who's on the verge of destroying everything. And I have to say, it's pretty terrific writing.
All right, and so then also, you have some other things coming up. TNT Drama, Major Crimes on February 15th.
Oh, yeah.
So you're going to be
busy.
Yeah,
that was something which was a return from when the show was called The Closer, when Kira Sedgwick was still the star. And they had brought me in then as, you know, multiple story arc as another character that everyone hates for some reason, Peter Goldman, a lawyer. And basically, the character drove Kira Sedgwick's character off the show, is the way that it all turned out when she left the show. And then they've become Major Crimes. They've been Major Crimes now for a couple of seasons, and they brought me back to get in more trouble. So I was doing that arc at the same time I was doing Supernatural and also New Girl, which I've been recurring on as well. So it's been a good year.
You've had a really good year, for sure. Yeah, and then also the new pilot, Heiston, as well.
Right.
That's going to be picked up. So congrats on that, for sure. Yeah. So.
Yeah, that's. I'm very excited about that.
What station is that going to be on, Heiston?
It's on Amazon.
Okay.
Yep.
The pilot season never ends, does it, Curtis?
It's changed a lot over the years. It really did used to be like this, you know, month and a half or 2 month period at the beginning of the year, and now it just goes on and on and on and on.
All right, and the other last big thing is again, Nerd's Progress will be out 2017. So I cannot wait. You got to come back on, Curtis, because I want to talk more memories of Revenge of the Nerds and all these things, because the brand continues to live on, and I can't believe it's 30 years. But I'm very excited for you that you continue to be working in some great roles in your career. Where can our listeners find out more information on you, Curtis, and stuff? Where can we go?
Well, you can go to Twitter. The Twitter name is Curtis is Booger, one word. And there's a Facebook page too, which is Curtis the Nerd. And those are both still out there, and you can Twitter usually is a little more active. Since I've been writing the book, I've had a harder time updating the Facebook page, but still doing the Twitter. And at this point, that's all I've got. I'm not on anything else, any of those other things, because I just don't have time.
So A Nerd's Progress will be out in 2017. You have so many projects. Just follow you on Twitter, and we'll know everything that's going on with you, Curtis. Thanks for taking the time, man. Enjoyed the conversation. One of my favorite shows, Nerds. Do you have a little quote you can do as Booger to finish up the show? Give us like a quick Booger thing.
We've got Bush.
All right. That was awesome. Take care. See you, Curtis.
Okay.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus. Also on Periscope, at Total Tutor. I'm excited to welcome the program. Fox, NFL Sunday, and Travel Channel, a host of Hello, Goodbye, Kurt Menefee. Kurt, thanks for calling us. Hey, Kurt, how are you doing? We're excited to welcome them from NFL Sunday on Fox and also the Travel Channel, Kurt Menefee. And I was mentioning the show right when I thought you got on the air about Hello, Goodbye. Tell us about how that project came about and stuff. It just seems very, very interesting, especially the stories that people can tell at the airport.
Yeah, you know, it really is. Everybody's got a story. When you talk to people, you have a conversation with them, you find out really interesting things about humanity. We laugh, we cry, we do a little bit of everything. And really it's called Hello, Goodbye because it takes place entirely in airports. We started out in Chicago O'Hare, Dallas, Fort Worth, Charlotte and Los Angeles. And I randomly just walk up to people, strike up a conversation with a camera crew in tow, and find out about who they are and how they got to where we are today. And really, 90% of the conversations have nothing to do with the travel aspect or who they're there to pick up or where they're going. It's really about them as individuals. And this is a project that, you know, I know that we shot for about a year in those four airports. And it's good to see it's finally hitting air here. And it's been a fun project all along the way for me, at least.
And what, especially because you travel in the airport all the time. You're always traveling in your job. Do you really think about when you see people walking in the airport, their stories? I wonder why they're here.
I think most of us do. You know, when you're sitting in an airport and you're watching people, or even in a coffee shop or whatever, you're people watching, you're like, I wonder what their deal is. Well, this gives you a chance to find out because you get to eavesdrop on the conversation, and we find out, you know, why people are at airports and where they're going and what's going on in their lives. And again, 90% of the stories really have nothing to do with the travel aspect of it. You find out that people are people, and we're trying to get to the same path, but we're using different challenges along the way that we have to overcome. A good example is, like, we have one that's coming up, I think, later in the series, where a woman is at the airport, and she's there to meet her son, bringing in his fiance, first time she's going to meet the future daughter-in-law. So you're like, okay, that's, you know, interesting story. But long story short, it turns out that she had the son when she was 14. She had a daughter when she was 16. She lost custody of both because she was a drug addict for decades. Finally, 8 years ago, got her life cleaned up. She's in her 50s now. And searched the country, found the two kids that she had lost as a teenager, got back in touch with them. You know, they didn't reconnect immediately. It's taking a while, as you might suspect. But have had phone conversations, seen the son once or twice, and finally was going to meet his future wife. And at the end of the story, she talks about how, you know, they've talked over the phone, and now he's going to bring her. And when he told her he was going to bring her to meet her, it was the first time he ever called her mom over the phone. And then she starts crying, you know, and you can just see how much this means to her and that she is finally kind of overcoming all of the obstacles and hurdles that she had in life. And so you get those stories that make you go, holy crap, the bad days that we think we have, you know, aren't necessarily so bad. And it allows you to empathize that way. But then you have some that are just fun and make you laugh along the way and are entertaining. We ran across a couple guys that are in tonight's premiere episode, one of the premiere episodes tonight, who are getting together for, let's just call it, an unconventional convention. It's family friendly, as the whole show is, but it's one of those things you're like, holy cow, I didn't know people actually did that, and there's a group of them, and they all get together. What is that about, and really, how do you get involved to that, and why would you want to do that, and those kinds of things. And they answer the questions, and we laugh, and we have a good time along the way as well. So it really runs the gamut of just about everything you can possibly think of.
And see, that's true, and that's all about why we travel.
Yeah.
It's not about, okay, our destination, why we're going to that destination. It's our story.
It really is.
Traveling for business, or it's traveling for entertainment or on vacation, but there always is a story and there's always an end result of that travel. And that's what makes it traveling so much fun.
There should be. There should be. You know, it's one of the things that, for me, the show, it's been going on, a version of it, in Europe for a decade. And a little over a year ago, towards the end of 2014, I know, it was announced that the Ellen DeGeneres' production company, she's the executive producer on it, had bought the American rights. And then they had a conversation with me about possibly hosting. And it's just a natural extension of what I do. And people say, well, I only see you on Fox NFL Sunday. You know, how is this an extension of what you do? Well, people that know me know that I travel a lot during the off season. I mean, my wife and I just, in March, spent the whole month of March down under in Australia, Tasmania, Solomon Islands, Vanuatu. We'll do a vacation like that every year. I've been to more than 80 countries, all seven continents. And when I travel, I like talking to people. I like talking to strangers. I mean, because to me, that's the reason to travel, as you say. You know, you can stay home and watch TV and watch the Travel Channel and learn about the whole world, or you can get out there and experience it. And I like to try and experience it and talk to strangers about their lives and what they do, where they are, and how they get through day to day is intriguing to me. And so to me, to do that in an airport is nothing unusual, to walk up to a stranger. I mean, look, when I'm in America, American airports, I'm usually going somewhere. You'll have a conversation with a person while you wait for your flight or while you're on the plane or whatever. But, yeah, this is gives me a chance, because I was hanging out in airports all day, to just talk to a variety of people about a variety of things. And it's for me, I loved it. It was perfect. I'm absolutely am fascinated by people, and this was the perfect way to kind of scratch that itch.
And this, yeah, that's interesting you said this, but remember, a lot of you guys do on Fox NFL Sundays, you're not always in the studio. You're traveling to different places. So, again, that's the other part. And you're telling lots of stories on Fox NFL Sunday as well,
mm-hmm.
meaning about
yeah.
the backstory, not just, you know, not just, okay, who's going to play and what are the chances of winning. You like to get into these special interest stories and different things, especially going on. I can't even imagine different places you've been on location for broadcasting on Fox NFL Sunday. You're a perfect person. And to work with Ellen and all that stuff, it's got to be exciting. And it looks like you're definitely you're finding more projects to do when football season is not in play, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, for me, it's just a chance to kind of spread the wings. And you know, it's not far from what I was doing. It's not like they have me coming out and you know, performing Othello, you know? I don't have to be an actor. I just go out and roll the camera and do what I do, have a conversation. And that's all it is. I mean, it really is. You're getting a chance to eavesdrop on conversations. And, you know, we talk to approximately 350 people for this show. You know, again, all
wow.
random, all unscripted, all unrehearsed. But only about 40 of the stories are going to make air. So you're talking a little over 10%. So, I mean, look, there are a lot of times you walk up to people and either, you know, they don't want to talk, and I'm not counting them in the interviews. I'm talking about the ones that actually did talk in that 350. But, you know, the story's
right.
maybe not that interesting, or, you know, they don't fit, you know, the way they tell a story is not fascinating. And, you know, you have stories that, again, it's no knock on anybody.
No.
But, you know, grandma's here to come to Pumpkin's fifth birthday is a cute story, but it's not compelling television.
No,
so you want to find something that's interesting, and it doesn't mean it's a train wreck because it's compelling television. A lot of times it's fun or funny, but it's something
exactly.
that draws you in, that you know, makes you want to listen, and makes you, as a viewer, want to have a conversation with that person. And that's what we're seeking, and that, you know, that's what we're able to find. And what was fun about it is that you're talking to these people who are not, you know, it's not like you're in a locker room where you've got guys that have done interviews their whole life, and they do it five times a week, and so they know what to say and what not to say.
Wow.
It's random people who, when they left home that morning, had no idea they'd be doing an interview on national television, and then are opening up their hearts and their lives and telling you everything that they possibly can. You know?
All right. So, again, tonight, May 9th, 11 p.m. Eastern, check out the Travel Channel, check out Hello Goodbye, and best place to find information on you as well. Find info on you,
sir. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Kirk, can we find info on you on Twitter and stuff? Where can we find info on you?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you there for a second. Yes, I'm on Twitter, at Kurt Menefee, and on Instagram as well.
Well, thanks for calling. Get tuned in and check it out, and I appreciate coming on the show. Take care.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, bye-bye. So you're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. I want to make sure to see if we do have Ronnie on the line. Ronnie, are you on the line?
Hey there. I'm going to put her on right now.
All right.
Ronnie, you're on the line. Hey.
All right, so we're excited to welcome, the program from Disney Stuck in the Middle, Ronnie Hawk. Ronnie, thanks for calling in. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
It's exciting to have you on the show. It's kind of funny. My daughter's a huge Disney fan, and I told her I'm interviewing you. I said, I'm interviewing a star from Disney, because I interview a lot of celebrities in a variety of backgrounds. A lot of them my daughter, who's 11, doesn't know. And I said, oh, I'm interviewing somebody from Stuck in the Middle. Really? Do you know who it is? And I go and I mention, she says, I know who she is. Oh, how cool. So at least you made my daughter think I'm cool for once today, having you on the show.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah, it's funny. So tell us the story, Ronnie, of how you wanted to become get involved in acting. Was it at an early age?
Well, I was 12 years old, so yeah, I would say it's about early age. I was big into dancing, but then I randomly just fell into modeling And there was an actor workshop in Fort Lauderdale, and it was two acting coaches that came out to L.A. And so I went to the workshop. It was an all-weekend workshop, and they were like, come out to L.A. We'll help you prepare to get an agent. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. So we found some, we set up some meetings with agents and managers, and I went out and I signed with Osbrink and Monster Talent, and from there I just started working.
Wow, so it came that easy, I guess, to you, but you started later, I guess, 12, because some people act a little younger than that. So was that difficult when you saw some of the places you started auditioning for, some of the experience some people had as a child actor that you didn't have as much?
Definitely. The first year was a whole learning experience to me. Mm-hmm. And it was weird seeing kids that have been doing it since they were like three. And I was like, shoot, these people are really prepared and they know what's up. Yeah, so it was difficult for the first year, but then I started getting the rhythm of it.
Okay, so once you got the rhythm of it, what would you say was a break before Stuck in the Middle? Like your first, like, act, some of the acting experience you had before getting the big break was Stuck in the Middle.
Weirdly enough, I didn't really do, like, I haven't really booked anything other than Stuck in the Middle. I've done short films, but that's about it.
Oh, wow. So you had to learn, I guess, rejection early then, right? Or you didn't audition a lot of different things to that opportunity?
No, I definitely learned rejection real early. Yeah, I had to get used to rejection.
What were they telling you, Ronnie? What are some of the things when you didn't get the gig or you maybe came close and just didn't get it? What were they saying?
Well, they don't really, like, if you don't book a role, they just don't call. Like,
you just don't get a call. Your agent doesn't tell you anything? Sorry. Like, well, why didn't you get the call? Your agent doesn't give you any feedback? Possibly,
I mean,
of why you didn't get it?
If I get really close to getting a role, then they will get feedback from, like, production. But for the most part, you normally don't get feedback.
It kind of reminds me of just a regular job interview. You go and you never get the call. Or get a second interview, you know, they didn't, were interested. That's what it sounds like.
I feel like a little girl waiting for, like, a boy to call, like, next to the phone. It's ridiculous.
And so after this experience was Stuck in the Middle, did you start getting some other acting gigs as well, like working when you're not filming Stuck in the Middle?
Well, since I booked Stuck in the Middle, I instantly started working, and I just wrapped season one. So I decided to fly home and spend time with my family because the last time I got to see them was like Christmas. So I'm here for summer and just getting to hang out with my family.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, so tell us about your character in Stuck in the Middle.
My character, her name is Rachel. She is the eldest of seven kids. She is a complete diva. She loves attention, loves pink, is addicted to boys, and slightly insane. But she loves her family more than.
Does that remind you of you at all? I don't know what, how big a family you grew up in. Seven kids. I have five of my own. I was only child, and now
Same.
I have five kids of my own. Yeah, yeah.
I am one of five.
Okay. So are
so
you
I'm
the oldest or youngest?
To the DS family.
So you're used to that. You understand? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm definitely used to it. I'm the fourth kid of five.
Oh, wow. When they were all little, let's go to your family for a second. Then we'll go into your TV family. How crazy was it? And you have to explain that to my wife, who is of three, but they were spread out. But right now I have an 11-year-old, the oldest that's the fan of yours. Then my youngest is a boy who's two. So we have two, three, five, six, and then 11. So basically, how were the ages in your family, and how crazy was it
in the house at times?
Well, the thing is, my dad's first marriage, he adopted two kids called Ben and Katie, and they were already grown up by the time that I came along. So it's like I didn't live in the house with them because they already, like, were out and making their own world. But, I mean, we're all such a close family. Like, they're always over here and we're always together. So, I mean, they were around. They just didn't live with me.
So you weren't at that crazy point like the ages that I'm talking about in one house? No. More you're like your TV family, right? What are the ages on the TV family?
It's 16, 15, 14, 13, and then it goes like 7, 6, or it goes 8, 7. No, wait, there's twins. So I think they're both like 8, and then there's Daphne, which is like 7 or 6.
So that sounds like the kind of crazy home that I have. If when they were younger, if they were a real family, meaning together at those ages when they were younger, that would have been chaos.
Definitely.
And so how does your character deal with the big family, especially with all the younger kids as well in the family? Does she like it, or she sometimes wants privacy?
She loves privacy, and she is the oldest. So she thinks that she deserves more attention and more, like, higher things than the other kids. But the other kids, like, bring her back to reality, and she definitely needs some of that.
Interesting when you talk about the kids being put back to reality. That's an important part. And it, probably at times you're like saying, as your character says, why are these little ones getting so much attention? I want my attention. And my parents are just spending that time. So it's an interesting character, to say the least, and really showing a true family of 7 kids and how crazy it can be.
Yeah, I give the writers props. They are amazing with this show.
Have you gotten lots of mail and tweets and things of people that grow up in big families that can really relate to this family?
Yes, it is the most amazing thing when all these sweet fans are like, I'm 1 of 7 and I have a big family and I understand and I'm able to relate to you. And that makes me so happy.
It definitely seems like it would, for sure. You're like, and you couldn't imagine that, right? Growing up in that kind of a situation where there's no privacy at all.
Well, filming, I'm getting like a clue of that. Because, I mean, there's so much of us on set. It's like you don't have any privacy. But it's like we love each other so much. We're just getting more and more used to each other.
And that's why the success of the show, if you guys didn't get along as a cast, it wouldn't last, right?
Definitely not, because I feel like with such a big cast, it can either go really good or really bad. Luckily for us, we all get along super well, and it's going amazing.
Who's able to keep the whole family together, especially the ages of the different actors and actresses and the whole set in general, to keep things moving at times, especially when you're filming for so many hours at times?
Well, a bunch of the kids have their moms come on set, so the moms will keep them in line, and they'll be like, look, because the kids will get tired and grumpy and things like that, and they'll be like, look, you can do it. And the older kids were always, like, there and supporting each other and be like, you can do it, it's fun. And it's just, like, we all really have to learn to be there for each other. I don't think it's one single person pushing us all along.
So you get in those tired modes, it sounds like, right? Ronnie, you get in those times like, oh, come on now, one more take. Explain that to people that might be wanting to be in this business and seeing what it's all about. It's not like the glamour, okay, one take and we're done. No, it isn't like that, is it?
No. Well, a lot of the public eye just sees the glitz and glamour of acting, and it is so much fun. And working, it's lots of long hours. And it's like you can do a take like 15, 16 times. I mean, you just got to learn to stay positive and really like love the people that you're working with.
And that's important. And then, so explain to them it's work. Even though it's a lot of fun to be on the set and to be on a show, it's work like anything else. And you have to continue to study your craft and look at your character and how the character develops and work with the cast. Teamwork is important, isn't it?
Yeah, teamwork is definitely huge, especially in a major cast that I'm in. And, like, on set, we're all together in, like, a building, and we have, like, the whole crew and cast has gotten sick multiple times, like, with flu season and everything, and, like, the whole cast was sick at a time, and we all had to fight through it and really support each other and still know our lines and be able to be on it.
Oh, my. And then the younger cast members that are not graduated from high school that are being tutored on set, that's the other interesting part of it, is that they're working while they're waiting to get on, back on set again on their schoolwork and working on specific things. And Ronnie, how old are you?
I haven't graduated.
Yeah, how old are you? I wanted to find out how old you are. Yeah.
I'm 16.
And you're very mature for 16. Yeah, the way you're speaking, I've interviewed lots of people. You seem like you're 18 or 19. I don't know if people have told you that.
I get that about every single day of my life.
Because you're not giving me these one-word answers like some celebs I interview. I'm like, oh, she must be older than that. So, yeah, so what are you planning on doing when you finish up high school? Are you going to keep working and go to college on half-time? What are your interests academically?
I want to go to college for archaeology, cultural management, and study, like, Egypt or the gypsies.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, but I still want to work, so I want to try to do both at the same time.
And that's an interesting story.
Or take breaks from both.
Right, right. A lot of child actors stop at a certain age and then come back into the fold. You want to continue to work, it sounds like. And it's interesting, you don't want to major in something like what you're doing now. You don't want to be go for film or go to specific things. Like, I've interviewed people that do that and are still working but yet are in that business. You have a completely different interest. So that's going to be interesting juggling once you are old enough to go to college.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love to study film. It just depends on how me maturing goes. By the time I'm 18 and ready for college, everything could have changed. I could definitely want to go for film, or I could still want to go for archaeology.
And are you being homeschooled, Ronnie?
I am being homeschooled.
Okay, you're homeschooled. Okay. And being homeschooled, and then a lot of times we're on set, you're being tutored, but being homeschooled, what age did you start being homeschooled?
I started being homeschooled about when I was 14.
Was that hard to get used to? Because you got to explain to people, homeschool's not always what it seems glamorous, just like acting, that you have to do more work sometimes. Yeah.
When you're homeschooled, they can't really have you do projects, like boards and things like that. So they have you do essays upon essays. Oh, yeah, and more essays. And it's like, I'm not in a class with a teacher, and I can't raise my hand and ask a question. I really had to learn how to interpret things on my own and learn how to teach myself in a way. But on set, we have, like, an on-set teacher. So it's like I do have a teacher, and I can raise my hand and ask the question, and it's amazing.
So that's interesting, an on-set teacher. So is she teaching the ones that are close to your age in the cast?
Yes. We have two teachers on set. We have one for the younger kids, and then we have one for me, Kayla, Jenna, and Isaac.
So, again, you finished up season one. You can't tell us what to expect for season two yet for Stuck in the Middle, correct, Ronnie? We have to wait and see.
You're just going to have to wait and see what happens.
And where your character goes, no one knows, right? And you're excited about all those things and cool. Best place we can find information on you, Ronnie, like where we can follow you on Twitter, Instagram, all those different places. Where can we go?
I'm just Ronnie Hawk on all of my social media sites.
Fantastic. And are you active on social media?
I'm very active. So, yeah, make sure to follow me.
Oh, we will make sure we follow you. Tweet out throughout all the syndication. Again, this is the live interview. Then next week it goes out to syndication, Ronnie. So you'll be bombarded with notifications and things from your fans about listening to the interview and really getting to know who you are and really interesting stories. Are you? What other things would you say are your interests for our listeners just to know about other interests for you, Ronnie? What do you like to do?
I love to work in animal shelters, and I love to go swimming and hike. And I'm just big on the outdoors. A lot of people don't know that about me.
Yeah, that's really interesting. The outdoors and animal shelters and stuff. Do you see yourself doing things in advocacy and charity work with animals someday? Is that something you look to do?
Well, I just signed up with a charity, and it's called the Thirst Project, thirstproject.org. That is it.
Okay, fantastic. Our listeners will Google that, and I appreciate you coming on the show. And I can't wait to tell my daughter about the interview. And best of luck with the next season and the success of your career.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Ronnie, see you later. Okay.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. I'm excited to welcome to the program Catherine Bell from Hallmark's channel's Good Witch. Catherine, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, sure, Neil. I'm good. How are you doing?
Fantastic, Catherine. I mean, to think about this role and how this role has been such a success. When you were first approached for this, were you surprised in that way? I know you're involved a lot into it, but did you think it would be such a successful show?
I had no idea. I mean, it was, you know, it was just a one-time TV movie for Halloween called The Good Witch, and it did great. People loved it. So the next year, I had another break from Army Wives, and they said, hey, you want to make another one? We said, sure. So we'd be, all of a sudden it became this annual tradition of Good Witch movies. I made 7 of those. And then when Army Wives ended, they grabbed me for a series, and now we're on season 2. It's crazy. It's like it's unheard of. Amazing.
Exactly. So it started out as a TV movie, and we all know how witches have success, especially if they're good, as we've seen the roles in the history of witches. Did you look back in that a lot and look at the days of how the successful witches and how they did so well on TV and stuff?
I grew up with, you know, Bewitched, and yeah, absolutely. There's definitely something, there's a pull there. Obviously people are interested in that. What is that? Is it real? Is it possible to have those kind of powers? And I think that's kind of the question on the show is she really a witch? Does she just know things about people, maybe more intuitive than others, or maybe she actually is a witch? There's always a broom in the corner of my kitchen as a little clue for you.
and so in that role, so you say growing up you like that. Which would you model yourself most after in your character, would you say, in a way, looking at the history of witches?
I did have a lot of Bewitched in my life when I was growing up. Loved that show. So much fun.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows for sure as well. Now let's talk about your character and to describe that, what makes her different to some of the other witches and Cassandra, Cassie Nightingale.
Well, you know, Cassie definitely has this incredible attitude about life that I always wish I had more of. She's the best in people and makes the best of any situation, no matter how bad. You know, somebody could come in who might appear to be even evil, you know, that's coming in to stay at her bed and breakfast. And somehow she just knows that there's another side or another layer or something underneath that. She helps bring that out, or she just knows the right thing to say to send somebody on a journey that, you know, transforms their life. And it was fun to watch how she connects those dots. Like, hey, take this box and deliver it down the street. And then she'd say the person runs into someone who becomes the love of their life, or, you know, whatever. It's just always something.
Yeah.
Exactly what that person needed.
So you're giving cheer to people that need it and helping people throughout in your show, for sure.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And people tell me that it just makes them feel good. It's like, oh, I watched that show and I just feel better about things. I love that. I don't think there's enough of that on TV, you know, that you can watch and feel good, you know, watch with your kids or whatever, not have to worry about some deep, dark, inappropriate thing.
Yeah, that's what's so great about the Hallmark Channel is that, you know, if you put your kids or the families in front of the television, you know the show's going to be a good show and it's going to be appropriate for the whole family to watch, which
exactly.
is kind
exactly.
of becoming a dying breed for now. Yeah.
It really is. And also it's not just a kid's show because there's, you know, a lot of those around, but it's something that parents can enjoy as well. And you're not racing to grab the remote to quickly change the channel because, don't look at that.
And I love the Hallmark Channel and the fact that what they're able to do is in their connections and things is they have the family. That's what we need. We need to sit down, Catherine, as a family and watch a show. So the adults
yeah.
are interested in it. The kids are interested in it. Everyone's interested in it. So there becomes dialogue
right.
and themes and things. And then you can discuss things with your family after the show.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's so true. So often we're all on our, you know, iPads or whatever. Everyone's off on their own, doing their own thing in their own little world. So it is, I know I watch with my kids, and even though it's me, they kind of forget that, and they're looking at Cassie Nightingale, and they're kind of like, wow, how did that happen? And, you know, and we do. We have that moment of bonding and just being able to have that experience together.
And did you, so I was kind of reading up on this. You came up with this idea then, correct? You in the show. Am I correct?
The show? No, actually, the show, as the first Goodrich movie, came to me just as a, you know, hey, do you want to do this? And it was great because I was on JAG at the time, and I was surprised that they thought I could even do this. But Orly Adelson, who was one of our executive producer, she had heard that this character is maybe more like my personality than the character that I'd been playing on JAG for 9 years. So they offered me the role just kind of sight unseen, and I was like, wow, how did you know that I could even play this? So I thought that was kind of cool. Just loved the script, dove in, and it just kept going from there.
And I guess the fan mail and the tweets and all the different things and the appearances, and especially when Halloween comes, you're a busy person, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Promoting this show for
yes.
sure.
Definitely. Yeah, so much social media now. I'm always trying to connect with fans on Twitter and Instagram and keep them posted on what's happening and try to live tweet as much as I can while the show's on, you know, just staying connected to the people that are keeping our show going.
Exactly. So Good Witches airs on Sundays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. What should we say?
Oh, I'm sorry. You broke up the line.
No. No, I said you're gonna see a transformation from your character, correct? What's gonna happen with her throughout this season, correct?
Yeah. This season's kind of about, you know, is Cassie ready to fall in love? Is she ready for, you know, is it Sam? And then there's other people that come in that distract her, and she's just not sure who it's gonna be or if she's ready for anyone. But definitely looks to be going in that direction this season. So some romance is brewing.
All right, well, fantastic. We can follow you on Twitter, all those best places, right? Correct, to find
Absolutely.
Out information.
Really CB on Twitter, yep.
All right. Well, fantastic, Catherine. Thanks for calling, and everyone
Great.
Needs to tune in
Thank
this
you.
Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, to The Good Witch. Take care.
Thanks,
See
you too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're okay. All right, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just a moment. Everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope, at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program. And this is such an interesting conversation for sure. Courtney Stodden from the Mother-Daughter Experiment on Lifetime. Courtney, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hello, I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic, Courtney. You know, when I think about this, even though my daughter's only 11, I see the relationship my daughter and my oldest daughter and my wife have and how they butt heads with each other and kind of, you know, go after each other all the time. It's something about that modern mother-daughter, isn't it?
There is something about the mother-daughter bond. I mean, you know, something beautiful and at times, you know, a little ugly, but it's a really precious bond that I think should be kept.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a precious bond. And when you think about this, Courtney, in all circumstances and things like this, when you were asked to do this, were you a little hesitant at first?
Oh, absolutely. You know, prior to the show, my mom and I hadn't spoke for at least 6 months. So we were in a really bad place before entering the mother-daughter experiment. So I was very hesitant.
You were hesitant because you just never knew what was going to happen next, right? You never knew what's the next situation and how you guys' explosiveness can start and things like that. And you said you're hesitant, but then when you finally said yes, is it because you thought maybe this can mend some fences of some times that what you've dealt with in your life with her?
You know, I eventually came around and accepted because, you know, I love my mother. And even though she has done some things a mother really should never, ever, ever do to her daughter, she's still my mom. And I love her. And, you know, that love will really never go away, at least on my end. So, yeah, of course, I was hoping that we could potentially get somewhere and move forward, hopefully in a positive direction with Dr. Debbie's help.
And what did you think of your experience? Was it a worthwhile thing to do this?
Absolutely. And I like to focus on positivity. Unfortunately, as of right now, my mom and I are not on speaking terms once again.
Okay.
But, you know, yeah. But, I mean, I'm very happy that I have the opportunity to see her, for one, attempt to work through our problems. And I feel, you know, regardless of where we are at this point, that I came out stronger.
What do you think you learned ultimately from this experience working with the doctor and all that stuff and with your mother? What are you going to try differently in that relationship with her?
You know, that's a really interesting question. It's hard to answer because I did realize, and Dr. Debbie helped me realize this, that you know, it's not like I'm this perfect human being. I'm not a perfect daughter, but I am way more willing to work on these issues with my mother than my mother is. My mom wants to run away. She wants to hide. She wants to lie and manipulate.
Right.
So, you know, I hope that she, you know, I think the ball is really more in her court now, and I will love her from afar, and hopefully one day we will be able to get through these issues when she decides that she wants to, you know, start taking a little bit of responsibility and truth.
Well, I'm hoping that for you, and, you know, it's always a difficult thing when relationships are broken, but you learn things from this, and hopefully at one point you guys will come together again in certain ways. And maybe when the finale does air on Lifetime, maybe things will change. We have to wait and see all these different things, Courtney. But I know you have – I'm excited. I love when I get to do a radio tour where I get to promote projects. And you also have a new song coming out, Asphalt. Tell us about that.
I do, yes. On more of a positive note, I just released a new song entitled Asphalt, and it's already been top 10 in 16 countries, so it's doing really well so far. Check it out. I think it'll have you twerking.
Yeah, so that's the thing.